Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Mary Izette, and I will be hosting the show tonight, along with my special guest host, John LaPola.
Hi, everybody.
Chris Kuzme is unfortunately not with us. He is at his final week of the American Brewers Guild course in Middlebury, Vermont. So, hi to Chris out there once he gets to listen to us.
At least he's doing something.
Cheers, Chris.
He's doing something beer related.
Exactly. So we have one announcement tonight. Is our chocolate and spice home fermentation competition, which is going to take place on December 8th at Jimmy's Number 43. We're still looking for fermenters. So if you ferment anything, alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverages, food items, if it's fermented, you're eligible. Come on and join us. There is no fee to enter, and you will get a ticket to the event. And then there are tickets available for those of you that don't ferment. All the information is now on our website, fermentaboutit.com, so check that out. Otherwise, let's get to our show. We have a great show tonight. First of all, it's our 50th episode.
Congratulations.
And as you guys can hear, we have a lot of people in the studio tonight. So our special guest is Johnny Compton III, all the way from Central Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Thank you.
And then our good friends, Haley and Steven, they were on a previous episode.
Word
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
So I first met Johnny, like I think maybe a 508, either 508 or OMA Gang. I feel like it was 508. Yeah. Exactly. So Haley and had put together this homebrewer kind of get together at 508. I mean, 508. Why do I keep saying that?
At Tap Room.
Tap Room 307.
Yes.
At Tap Room 307. And we showed up, and this guy was there, and he had come from Central Pennsylvania, and he brought all these killer sour beers, like lots of killer sour beers.
Yeah, he brought like a tub of full. It was like six cases or something.
It was a hard show guitar case.
And he showed up with a whole like entourage, and it was like, ooh, who's this guy?
Everyone showed up with a bottle or two that were just kind of local homebrewer friends of ours. This guy comes from PA with about 50 sours, and we're like, hi, welcome. It was lovely, but we were like, this guy, we got to pay attention. What's going on?
Exactly. Yeah.
So my homebrewing story dates back way before, I mean, 12 years ago I started homebrewing. So back then you had like, you know, American ale yeast, English ale yeast, a lager yeast, and maybe a Belgian strain, you know, like just a generic Belgian strain. So I learned pretty early on that I couldn't do what I was drinking. You know, I was drinking good beer, and I couldn't figure out how to do even the classic European beers without. So I started stealing dregs, and dregs can be dreadful, and, you know. And so this is back in the day. I mean, I'm grinding away. I'm buying grains from wine shops, and I'm just trying to keep brewing, you know, because there was nothing going on. And then all of a sudden, boom, like yeast just be – I'm like, oh, what did that say that yeast was? It tastes like wow, you know. So I started playing with a little bit of those, and then I had a little hiatus in my brewing just because, you know, life, kids, stuff happens. Beer should be the most important thing. I'm not lying to you.
I completely agree with that.
And then you have children. You're like, oh, God, they're screwing with my beer. So,
but said at some point you had a yeast jump ship and infect all your beers.
Oh, well, here's what happened. So I moved to a different location. I was in Rochester, New York, brewing for like 5 years. Then I moved down to Central PA, and I bought this old brick mansion. It sat empty for 9 years. The person before me had it for a little bit, but they didn't do a lot of renovation.
We're talking Miss Havisham.
Yeah, like
level.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the pictures are like, you might be murdered there. Or you'll live through it.
But either way, you'll be drunk.
Like the set of a horror film.
Well, I converted the whole like back corner of the house into this brewery, and I just had these beers going nuts. And I started stealing the wild yeast from the house, and because you know you read all these things on wild yeast and lambics, and that's the stuff you want to make because it's $30 a bottle, and you can make it for 25 cents a glass. Let's make that. You know what I mean? Like,
you actually use yeast from this house, from this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's where I'm going. So you start reading all this literature on these beers that you want to be drinking because you can't afford them. I mean, consistently.
Or get them.
And right. So I'm like, okay, I can't afford or get this, so I'm going to brew this. So I'm reading all this literature, and it basically it's like, okay, well, then just get in a time machine, Johnny. Because there's nothing else to do. They don't tell you nothing about bread. Like, they don't know anything about what's going on. So you get, I mean, the wild yeast, and there's certain beers, books have been written lately that are really catching on. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll just start doing trial and error in a time machine. So I open up the house to all the wild yeast and the infections and whatever's going on in the air and just started inoculating different beers. And that one tasted like moldy, dirty feet. We should pour that down that little drain right there. And then this one, wow, what's going on there? So you just start just playing with it, and it just built into this whole weird thing. Where
so how are you collecting wild yeast? Were you collecting in a
you
separate
just
container
leave beer or just sit out open?
Just open containers
and open windows and open doors. He is a maniac. We've been to his house, and I was just like, okay, wow. I was like, this is how you do it. And then I'm looking around. I'm like, this guy is committed. Like he
or should
is,
be.
Yeah.
No, you're right. There was one time when we were trying a beer and Haley's like, it's a little chalky. And he's like, oh, wow, I can't believe you picked up on that. That was the June bugs. That
stink
fell
bugs.
Into the beer.
Stink,
stink bugs. The bugs.
They love that shit. They
he
die
said
for
it. Was
it.
About 20 bugs in this beer. And we were drinking it, and we're like, wow.
Like, thanks for telling me after.
You should put that on a bottle, like, fermented with the wild yeast off of the skins of bugs.
What's your percentage of success when you do that, when you do the open fermentation?
Well,
success meaning
I haven't had a failure in a couple years because you figure out how to, like, take an infection that's exaggerated and place it over there and then blend it back together.
Okay.
So I've been working on that kind of level. But as far as like early on, I mean, dude, yeah, I dumped some more.
Yeah, he does.
I would say
like
70%
cuvee. Like you really do blend things in,
blend like
and
crazy.
Take things that are a little funky and put it into a fermenter of a fresh beer where like he's doing some techniques and developing yeast that I never even heard of professional brewers doing where we're like, he's really on to something.
I mean, it's just, it seems to me like the stuff you can't teach, it's the kind of stuff that comes from experience with those things.
The art.
Living in an
the
old
art
mansion.
Of brewing.
Yeah. Well, there's an intrinsic nature to what you taste and what you remember.
Sure.
And I just have a little bit of a good processor for that.
Do you have an actual lab? Are you using a microscope and counting yeast?
Lab, or, dude.
No, nothing.
Yeah. No,
nah.
We're talking okay.
Lab.
We're talking like
we'll have some photos for the website later.
You got a lab.
Yeah. They are so opposite, Steve.
Well, that's
and
what's
Johnny.
So crazy is that, you know, I met Johnny and I started tasting his beers. I'm like, oh my God, they're on a different level than I've ever had. I mean, they're like I'm trying these sours and stuff and I'm like, you know, there's professional sours that don't even come to this level.
Yeah.
And I start talking about his process with him, and everything he said, I was like, wow, I do the exact opposite.
Yeah, Steven's like, how do you sanitize? He's like, what?
Sanitize?
He's like, no, I'm just like, leave the door open. A raccoon might come in.
I mean, you put an airlock on it, though,
you're
right?
Like,
and he's
what?
Like, no. And then it's like, oh, what, you know, how much hops do you use? I don't know, like a handful of this or that. I'm like, I do the opposite. I scale my hops to do the IBU additions. What
he's
about
got,
yeast?
He's got
oh, I pitch on the.
I mean, weird stuff.
Steven is meticulous.
He's like, you know, I'm like, well, what kind of yeast are you pitching? What are you doing? Oh, no. If it's tasting good, if a beer's tasting good and I bottle it, I'll rack another one on top of it. I'm like, yeah, I do the opposite of that. I buy yeast, culture it up, add it, you know. But it's really crazy because the beers taste so good, and it's kind of like, well, if everybody's teaching us to do it one way, but he's doing it the opposite way, like, then maybe he's right. I don't know. And are the other people wrong? I don't think so.
Louis Pasteur is rolling in his grave.
You know?
We were trying to get rid of these infections. That was the whole
idea.
Keep
it clean, for God's sake.
Do you do mainly open fermentation, or do you also pitch Brettanomyces?
Well, when it comes to pitching, open fermentation happens, and then I pitch on top of that, on top of that. But the open fermentation is the first step of every process.
There is a legend that I want to know if it's true. Did you, in fact, once this infection had happened, take smack packs and, you know, madly Jackson Pollock style fling them around the brewery space?
No, I was way better than that. I took a slap pack, brewed an all Brett, or an all lacto beers with that. Got one of those little garden sprayers with a pump.
And the little trigger. I knew this happened.
And then I have an old house, like I said. So I got the wood and I got it all restored. I started spraying this shit out of this wood, all the stuff out of this wood, like up, down, left, right. You know, just to like make things happen.
Cool.
And I've been able to, in a weird way, through a lot of trial and error, I'm speeding the process up as fast as I can. You know, I can turn out a pretty good sour beer in like 6-7 months.
Well, no, but even your house yeast, I mean, when we were at BCTC this year, that's Belgium, for people who don't know, Belgium comes to Cooperstown
at the Brewery Oma Gang.
Yep. He had a beer that was he brewed it 2 weeks ago. And I told him, you know, this beer has a level of complexity from the yeast and a level of tartness that I have not been able to achieve on beers that are fermented for months and like over a year. And he's getting it in 2 weeks with his house yeast.
And that's pitching on a yeast cake, on your already existing yeast cake that you used in another
beer. No, see that, some of those, I actually had a barrel that got over-infected with a Acinetobacter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, fruit flies. You know, what do you do with those things?
That is a problem.
They live for a day, so you can't actually kill them.
Right. And they multiply like
live for two, and I'll kill all of you. Fruit flies. But, so I had the fruit flies, and they got a barrel, and they took it over. And I was like, that was that barrel I actually called my precious. I just had 18 different strains of Brettanomyces that I had not got. Like, and a Acinetobacter took it over. So I was like, I'm going to save my precious. So all the beers he tasted at Oma Gang were me saving my barrel back from a Acinetobacter. So they're getting a lot of these high-end, like the really high-end esters of the sours that take years to develop with a Acinetobacter. They're getting those initially, and then I'm able to freaking, you know, play with the other stuff.
So those are quick drinkers. Do you think if they had sat in the barrel for longer, like
they'd be vinegar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to pull them off the vinegar, or even let them, if they're on the vinegar for too long, yeah, let them go like 3 years, and they turn into like that weird, like, middling Belgian thing that happens, that dankish but good part of Belgium. That's the Acinetobacter after 3 years, I think.
So that barrel, so are you primary fermenting in that barrel then?
That and a couple others.
Okay, but I mean, that's what you're getting. So you're primary fermenting for like
Then I barrel age, and then I rack. And then,
okay.
So a lot of my longevity beers, believe it or not, I keep in glass because
don't try and understand what he does.
No, I think this is awesome. I'm just trying to get the picture in my head.
That's what I, like, I had tasted this and been kind of talking through it with him, and you see the madman at work, and you were like, this is nuts. He's created such a cool little mad scientist lab to create these beers. I don't know if it can be replicated, but he definitely produces some crazy beers.
Well, he definitely has like a house strain, and like every beer that I taste of yours, like I get a little bit, there's like a similarity in all of them,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the yeast, and it's like, you just take one smell and you're like, that's a Johnny Leroy beer. And, you know, I feel like getting to know Belgian breweries, you smell their beers and it's like they have that house strain, but this is like a house strain, but it's like more complex than just a straight Belgian, you know, Servomyces yeast. It's got the bread, it's got the lacto, it's got the PDO, it's got all these like weird funky things,
mutations,
you know.
Probably.
It's just got so much going on.
Well, shout out like Terry Hallbacher from Bullfrog and now Pizza Boy is from my region over in Central PA, and he saved me decades of my life. Like, I'd be like, Terry, so I'm doing this and this barrel tastes like, and he was just honest with the answer. He's doing it, you know, he's selling Bullfrog beers. You guys are probably trying to taste
it. I love Bullfrog.
Yeah.
Right?
I went all the way out to Central PA to go to the
he's the
to their
best brewer I've ever had. No, hands down. So, and he's telling me, like, thank God for Facebook.
Yeah, another unassuming genius.
He's telling me all of his secrets via, like, this instant messenger stuff. And I'm like, wait, that's open to anybody. But the guy makes incredible beer, and he was able to save me a lot of time because I would question him on how, when this happens, that happens. And, you know, there's levels in tasting you get at with beer that you can talk about different things with people. And he was really cool with me. So I owe him a lot. But apart from that, it's just a lot of trial and error, a lot of dumping, a lot of dumping. Keep that going. Throw that. Moldy feet are bad. You don't want to drink those.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more sour, crazy, bacterially infected beers.
And moldy feet.
Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. This community-oriented company was built on a vision of providing ecologically responsible and ethically produced food to area consumers. During a typical week at the Regional Access warehouse, they help move thousands of pounds of natural and grass-fed meat, gallons of farm-fresh dairy, and tons of organic and specialty foods from producer to market. Having been in the distribution business for almost 25 years, Regional Access's experience and knowledge make them uniquely equipped to build out their region's food web. Up in the Finger Lakes, Regional Access will continue to champion the region's bounty and work toward a sustainable food system for the entire Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
Oh yeah, I pull up the day I only brew when the yeast is ready before it. So if the yeast.
Oh, we're back. Sorry, we're looking at photos on Johnny's phone. We're like totally fascinated. So he's just talking about. So what kind of ferment? We're just looking at photos of your fermenters at your house. So you use a variety of fermenters, including some plastical conical fermenters.
Yeah, I have a 30-gallon conical and a 20-gallon. I was talking about the 530 by White Labs.
Mm-hmm.
That yeast is so active. It overflowed. I pitched 12 gallons into a 30-gallon fermenter. It overflowed and went onto the floor. And
that's crazy.
But that's in like the seventh generation of something that's really going on. But as far as fermenters, I mean, I did a trash can series where I just took trash cans and put beer in them.
Like plastic trash cans?
Yes.
Okay. I want to know this information.
From Walmart.
The old trash can series.
Awesome. Yeah. For like $1.50.
You're opening Pandora's box here.
I know. And you just did a complete open fermentation, right?
Well, think
right?
about it. Like, I'm thinking about starting a brewery, and I'm like, well, they got this food-grade plastic thing going on. What does it really do in fermentation? Like, the actual fermentation process? Because there's so much other stuff going on. If you have a good active yeast, how does that affect the flavor? So I just did a trash can and a glass.
How did it affect the flavor?
Not at all.
No, wow. And it was they were food grade garbage pails?
No.
Oh, they were. They were just plastic.
The trash can. Wow.
Did you take the garbage out of them first?
Yeah.
No, I bought them at Walmart. I rinsed them and bleached.
Filled them
and I rinsed
with
them
apple cores and
I put a beer on them.
Oh, you actually sanitized them?
Yeah, with bleach.
Oh, okay.
All I use is bleach and two rinses. That's all I have in my brewery. I don't have anything else. There's none of this star sand. I don't
have
any bubbles.
Save a lot of money on sanitizer.
Oh, yeah.
There's another example. I do the opposite of that.
I don't want any bubbles. I just want beer on beer.
Steven wears a hazmat suit.
And I clip my nose together.
So, Johnny, I want to ask you something. I own a homebrew shop, and people are really into making sour beers now, or at least learning about it. We're not getting so many people making them, but we're getting more and more people just asking questions about it. So what would be like, if there's a one thing you could say to somebody starting out making a sour? What?
Wait.
Wait. Just be
and
patient.
Don't read a blog. And don't listen to any internet radio stuff.
No? Not even this show.
No.
No, this is the only show you should listen to.
Today.
This is the only one, yes.
But no, really.
See, I knew the opposite.
There's a lot of misinformation out there. You got to watch it. I'm not kidding. Like, because we don't know what's going on. Like, and people try to know what's going on, where I'm as like, yeah, God was pretty cool right then, right?
Right.
Like, that beer's awesome.
No, yeah, but think about that. It's like he's pitching on an acetobacter yeast cake. Like, every story I've ever heard, it gets acetobacter, dump the beer, chop the barrel out, get it out of the brewery.
Yeah.
And he's repitching beers
it, burn it.
On a two-week fermentation on an acetobacter yeast cake, and I'm trying them, and I'm like, this is amazing.
Do you find...
In 2 weeks.
Yeah. I believe that. Do you find, though, so that acetobacter, those beers that have been exposed to a decent amount of acetobacter in your barrel, do you find if you bottle them, then do they go to a point where they get very vinegary and then
fades
again?
Oh, no, they're vinegary when they get dumped. They turn into this, like, pellicle. And, like, it's just not. I mean, I'll make a nice salad with them.
Right. Do you ever use that?
Drink oh, yeah, fresh. Yeah. I have a little spritzer.
Yeah, but those you have to drink kind of fresh, right?
In order unless you let it sit for 3 years. Unless we used it for salad dressing, okay. Literally. Like, that's not a joke.
You call them your summer sippers.
Yeah, they're nice.
But anyway, so shrubs are hip right now. You can make shrubs with them.
But you have this acetobacter problem. So, right. I mean, what do? You burn your brewery down? You give up? No. You go, okay, there's acetobacter. I'm going to isolate it, and I'm going to let it age and see what happens. So I've taken a lot of glass, and I've put acetobacter in it, and it's getting better. It's been a couple years. I don't know. We'll see what happens in 3 or 4 more. I don't know. I mean, you just keep moving. So I have these barrels that have the acetobacter infection. Well, you pitch that with some great Brett's and some great this and some great
some
that.
Stuff
and some
that
house.
Might outcompete it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and not just that, but fruit flies are really where that stuff's coming from, the acetobacter.
Acetobacter.
Like, oh, God, I hate them things.
And they're so little.
And I want to get a bug light, but... What's
close
that
your
really,
window.
What's that really?
Cheesecloth.
Do you make anything not sour in your brewery?
Yeah, yeah. I can make them.
You can, but do you?
I have this beer called Compton Chronic, and my name's Johnny Compton, so it's really based on my name.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It doesn't taste anything like Chronic.
No. Not
okay. But it's actually a blended IPA, which is something I'm working with that I don't know if a lot of people are doing, but I'll brew single hop beers. Blend them together towards my flavor profile I want, and then I'll take basically the amount of hops that I have in this flavor profile and dry hop it, and then I'll put it on draft, and it's nice.
Now, what about a lot of people have a fear of making sours because they're afraid their entire brewery is going to infect.
Whatever you rack that thing with, put a black X on it of death.
What about
the transferring equipment? No, they're good.
Fermenters are good, but the transferring equipment.
If you think they're bad, go out and get some of that. Hey, they got stuff out
we
there.
We had
Kill
an
everything.
Issue once with tubing. This, like you said.
Tubing. Yeah, it's so cheap, too. I mean,
get rid of the tubing.
Or just use it for another sour,
right? You sanitize everything,
right.
And you exactly. get a different little dipstick. You have the brand new carboy, and then all of a sudden you're like, it was the tubing. It was like the one thing you forget. And
the 42 cent yard.
It is. That's the only place it lays, is in that plastic. And tubing, for some reason, has extra cuts in it. I don't know what it is about
it,
but it picks up stuff. I don't
just
know.
Because it's flexible, like it moves and then
it picks up so
we can't
much.
Scrub it out. I mean, that's the.
You can heat it out. I bottle with a plastic.
Says the scientist.
A plastic, basically, our sparge tank. Is a giant water cooler, and I bottle sours and regular beers in it because I know every time I brew, I'm putting like boiling hot water in it, and I'm basically killing all the bacteria.
Right.
So you can heat kill plastic, but the sanitizers won't kill the bugs.
When you're going from primary to secondary, that's when most of your
infection.
Anytime a beer's below 90 degrees. You're in trouble.
Yeah, it's at risk.
Yeah, well, just keep track of it. You know, like, let it happen. if you want, like I do, but just keep track of what happened.
Right.
Like in a
put
week
the
ago,
big black X
oh,
on
man,
it.
Oh man, that takes like that. I should put that over in a corner, and 3 years later, I'll come back and say hi. You know, but you have to like understand what's going on.
We got to try this.
You hey, so I have two questions. That? The first is, so we just had a beer that you said was a hop burst saison, right? So you're putting hops only in Whirlpool, no hops.
Well, currently, I only brew beer for me, so it's what I'm into drinking. I'm into the lower ABV range, so the malt profile is whatever it is, a little muddled, but lower ABV. And then I'm really into like you know, the good resin hops with the citrusy, you know, West Coast finish. But I love the early resin of like a Sculpin. And then what I really like about all these beers nowadays is like you have these crazy yeasts you can play with. So I'm putting a little bit of my sours with some of the saison yeast. And you have some great early results, but these beers are a little bit older, so they've become a Compton sour.
Right.
And the first one we're trying is called a Hop Burst. Well, that beer, when I brewed it, was just a regular beer with, in the you know, the Whirlpool, I just threw 4 ounces of mint, I don't know how you say it?
Motuka.
Oh, yeah.
Motuka. I love this hop. I can't say this hop.
Right.
But I love this hop. I found it when it was like, you know, $10.99 for an ounce. And then all of a sudden overnight, it's like 24. I'm like, no. I ain't doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So then you scour the internet, you end up paying $20.99. But yeah, I love that hop and it blew up. But it's a great hop. And all I did was that hop in the final.
We actually brewed today with it as well. We used some great hops, and we did kind of a similar idea where we wanted to do more like a farmhousey saison rather than like full sour. But yeah, we got a bunch of late edition hops for that like big hop aroma. Like we're thinking of a name still, but it's kind of like a farmhouse. Like you didn't realize you were drinking an IPA because of all the like yeasty, funky characteristics. But then you're like, this is like 88 IBUs. And
a lot of hops.
Yeah.
We should name this over the radio because we're trying to name this beer.
The one that we're drinking now?
Would be great if people help. No, not this one, but we did, like I was saying, farmhousey, funky bunch of hops. What do we call that? Yeah, we're looking for a name.
The farm's back door?
Farmhouse, funky, bunch of hops.
There we go.
There you go. I'm terrible at naming my beers. I've always.
Yeah, where's been, Chris when you need him?
Oh God,
yeah, he's great. At it, yeah.
Puns galore, Chris. I love you.
All right, here's my second question. Do you ever take written notes, or you keep this all in your head?
I do have a black magic marker.
I've seen it scribbled on like a used, like it's like a paper that was used for something, like a letter or something.
You know the
like
paper that you had in high school that you ripped and had those little things and you
hated
those?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's all I want to use.
See, I do the opposite of that.
And I have a notebook and I write on there in the black magic marker scribble real quick, like the brief notes that'll bring my memory back to where I was. And then I just stick it on a hook in my brewery. There's a lot of hooks. A lot
of By the way, that's the name of your beer. I do the opposite.
Yes!
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, so what advice do you have for people that want to loosen up a little and get
my,
with the
my
sour?
My advice to homebrewers
get
is
with
this.
Their,
well, the, listen. Lower your cost. It's not that hard. Like, you can look around. You can find grains for cheaper. You can find a way to make
harvesting
your beer cheaper.
Harvesting the dregs is your biggest tip that I've learned.
Harvesting dregs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can harvest dregs, and when you do harvest dregs, do it off a batch you're currently brewing, like just like the straight up beer. You know, you're going to put your regular yeast on it. Well, put these dregs on it, and then put a good bit so you can try it and go, oh, that's funky feet. Pour that down a drink, because I've poured a lot. I mean, I can show you. You probably saw them in the pictures. I'll have like 15 vials of different yeast doing stupid stuff. I mean, some of it's like, what the hell? And some of it's like, woo! Let's do this again, you know. So you just got to keep experimentation, trial and error. You know, it's
find
like
the vein.
It's like anything in life. If you really want to make good sours, you have to layer it with your own experience.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be great at anything in life, it's going to take experience. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take work. That's the there's two ways to be a great brewer: the hard way and the rough way. And you better brew. You know, that's all I can tell you.
I agree with that completely. Just keep brewing.
Yeah.
And if you have to dump, you have to dump.
But I work with a lot of
or
beginners, and they don't want to dump anything, you know.
Well, because they got their whole family involved.
Yeah,
it's like just buy a brew kit, hide out in your basement, like I did for 2 years. You know, nobody needs to know you're doing this stuff.
Don't get too attached to your beer.
What's right. he building down there?
Don't get too attached to your beer. I like that.
I do want to feel good, you know, to dump 5 gallons down a drain or whatever and feel good about it and know that, hey, that's a learning lesson and there's something better coming.
No, you're absolutely right. So. And like I said, if you lower your cost and your initial investment's lower, you don't give as many cares.
Do a trash can.
Garbage cans, yeah.
You can do a trash can.
Trash can, wild yeast.
We're now carrying those at Bitter and Esther's. We have 55-gallon garbage cans.
And you utilize, I mean, last time we were on the radio show, we were talking about, we gave you a shout-out. We talked about the second running beers. And, you know, I feel like your brewing style, you really use all the stuff you bring in very efficiently. You know, it's like you're green, but without like trying to be green, you're just doing it because it makes sense.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing is
blend in the beer like you do.
Yeah.
Well, that's not happening every day. Like you really have to know sours and tastes to figure out the infections and what's going on. So if you want to brew great sours, drink great sours. Yeah. Like you want to cook great food, eat great food. It's the same concept.
So true.
You know, and when you taste them, remember it or write it down. Like either way, but always know what you're tasting and how those notes are. And then you can, I mean, a lot of brewers are giving away too much on the side of their bottles, in my opinion. So you can really figure out what's going on, the different hops, and different, you know, what layers.
What do you mean by that? As far as the information or in the bottle itself?
Well, they tell you what I mean.
Yeah,
they're pretty much giving you their recipe.
If I ever brew commercially. Yeah. It's going to be like a black X. Like.
Oh, that's why he called it my precious, because it's his alone.
You may taste it, and that is all.
Yeah, I knew the opposite of that.
I have a new level of elitism. These brewers are way too chatty for me. I use Challenger and Northdown. I'm like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we do that.
Now, what about dregs, actually, from a bottle?
Oh, dregs can be dreadful, like I said. The biggest thing is always use a beer that you made. Don't mess with the malt syrups, and I mean, you're gonna sell this.
Beginners,
right? But if you're brewing a beer, take that beer, and what's this much of that beer gonna do?
Right.
So put it in a little 1 gallon carboy you buy for $3 at a yard sale, and put a, you know, get one of your nozzles from your store, and then pitch the dregs in there.
Only from bitterness.
Yeah. And as you're brewing the beer, you just take the thing and you put it over there and then you inoculate it and you try it out.
Yeah, every brewer loves to drink. So as you're brewing and you're drinking your beers, give it a little swirl and just pour it right in that carboy, harvest it, keep it growing.
Yeah. You
know, the hardest thing for me is forecasting. Like I can literally take different beers, put them together and try to forecast what's that beer going to be like 30 degrees colder with carbonation.
Yeah.
Those are the two biggest questions you have to answer as
with
a great brewer.
Any kind of beer you're making. Yeah.
And you have to go, okay, so what's going to happen then and then? And if you can, over trial and error, figure it out in your head, then go for it. You know, just always trust your gut. And if your gut sucks, then stop brewing. Go woodwork, do something else. I don't know.
No, I think don't give up, because I feel like I hear people go, oh, I had a bad batch, and then I don't know, I never did it again. And I'm like, we all do.
Yeah.
Okay, my first batch of beer was brewed on the worst day ever, September 11th, and it was my first batch. My landlord brewed it at his house. The dog drank out of the open ferment. He lapped that stuff up, like a half gallon of that stuff. That was my first beer ever.
Happy and dog.
The first 8 batches I brewed on my own, they weren't even like conceivable as beers. Like I was the biggest failure ever.
Have you ever tried dog fermentation?
That's what I'm saying. Like, but you got to keep up with it. All I'm saying is like, don't give up, because it's easy. It's easy.
I've heard people say, you know, I've been brewing for this amount of years, but you know, I've never had an infection. And I say, well, you've never truly lived.
Exactly. So thanks.
That's a t-shirt.
Johnny, Haley, Steven, and John, for helping me co-host. So thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Kuzme will be back next Monday, 7 p.m. live on Femen About It.
Femen About It.
Femen About It.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.